Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Assembly in Congregation, Mount Zion, 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is May the 3rd, 2025. It is the seventh day of Zip, 2029. We're going to continue our second service now on this day on the subject of Seth and Enoch, part 2. Chapter 6 of the Patriarchs and Prophets. This is for the Adam's life was one of sorrow. And humility and contrition. When he left Eden, he thought that he must die, thrilled him with the horror. He was first made acquainted with the reality of death and the human family when the Cain, his firstborn son, became the murderer of his brother. Filled with the keenest remorse for his own sin and doubly bereaved in the death of Abel and the rejection of the Cain, Adam was bowed down with anger, for he witnessed a wide-spreading corruption that was finally to cause the destruction of the world by a flood. And though the sentence of the death pronounced upon him by his Maker had at first appeared terrible, yet after beholding for nearly 1,000 years, the results of sin, he felt that it was merciful and noble to bring to an end a life of suffering and sorrow. Notwithstanding the wickedness of the antediluvian world, that age was not, as has often been supposed, an era of ignorance and barbarism. For the people were granted the opportunity for the reaching of a high standard of a moral and intellectual attainment, for they possessed great physical and mental strength, and their advantages for their acquiring both of religious and scientific knowledge were unrivaled. It is a mistake to suppose that because they lived until a great age, that their minds matured late. For their mental powers were early developed, and those who cherished the fear of the Yahweh and lived in harmony with his will continued to increase in the knowledge and wisdom throughout their life. Could the illustrious scholars of our time be placed in contrast with men of the same age who lived before the flood? They would appear as greatly inferior in the mental as in the physical strength. As the years of man have decreased and his physical strength has diminished, so his mental capacities have lessened. There are men who now apply themselves to study during a period of from 20 to 50 years, and the world is filled with the admiration of their attainment. But how limited are these requirements in the comparison with those of men whose are mental and physical powers were developing for centuries? It is true that the people of the modern times have the benefit of the attainments of their predecessors, where the men of the masterly minds who planned and studied and wrote have left their work for those who follow. But even in this respect, and so far as little human knowledge is concerned, how much greater the advantages of the men as that olden time, for they had among them for hundreds of years a him who was formed in the Yahweh's image, for whom the Creator himself pronounced a good, for the man whom Yahweh had instructed in all the wisdom pertaining unto the material world, Adam had learned from the Creator the history of the creation. He himself witnessed the events of the 9th century, and he imparted his knowledge unto his descendants. For the antediluvians were without books, they had no written records, but with their great physical and mental vigor, they had strong memories, able to grasp and to return that which was communicated unto them, and in turn to transmit it unimpaired to their posterity. And for hundreds of years, there were 7 generations living upon the earth contemporaneously, having the opportunity of the consulting together and profiting each by the knowledge and strength of all. For the advantages enjoyed by the men of that age to gain a knowledge of Yahweh through his works have never been equal since, and so far from being an era of the religious darkness, that was an age of great light. All the world had opportunity to receive instruction from the Adam, and those who took the Yahweh had also Yahshua and angels to their teachers, and they had a solid witness to the truth in the Garden of Yahweh, which for many centuries remained among men at the cherubim guarded gate of paradise, the glory of Yahweh, revealed, and hither came the first worshipers. Here their altars were reared, and their offerings were presented. It was here that the Cain and Abel had brought their sacrifices, and Yahweh had condescended to communicate with them. Skepticism could not delay the existence of Eden while it stood just in sight, for its entrance, barred by the watching anger, the order of the creation, the object of the garden, the history of its 2 trees, so closely connected with a man's destiny, were undisputed facts, and the existence and supreme authority of Yahweh, the obligation of his law, were truth, which men were sure to question while the Adam was among them. Notwithstanding the prevailing iniquity, there was a line of the holy men who, elevated and ennobled by the communion with the Father Yahweh, lived as in the companionship of the heavens. For they were men of the massive intellect of the wonderful attainment. They had a great and a holy mission, to develop a character of a righteousness, to teach a lesson of the righteousness, that only, not only to the men of that time, but for the future generation. Only a few of the most prominent are mentioned in the scripture. But all through the ages, Yahweh had the faithful witnesses, true-hearted worshipers. Of the Enoch, it is written that he lived 65 years and begat a son. After that, he walked with Yahweh 300 years. During these earlier years, Enoch had loved and feared the Yahweh and had kept his commandments. He was one of the holy lines, the preservers of the true faith, as the progenitors of the promised seed. From the lips of the Adam, he had learned the dark story of the fall, as the ensuring one of the Yahweh's grace, as seen in the promise, and he relied upon the Redeemer to come. So with the birth of the first son, Enoch reached a higher, but after the birth of his first son, Enoch reached a higher extreme, for he was drawn into a closer relationship with the Father, for he realized more fully of his own obligations and responsibility of the Son of Yahweh. And as he saw the child's love for his father, his simple trust in his protection, as he felt a deep yearning tenderness of his own heart for that firstborn son, he learned a precious lesson of the wonderful love of Yahweh to men and the gift of his son, and the confidence that the children of Yahweh may repose in the Heavenly Father, for the infinite, unfathomable love of Yahweh to Yahshua became the subject of his meditation day and night, and with all the fervor of his soul, he sought to reveal that love unto the people among whom he dwelt. Enoch's walk with the Yahweh was not a trance or a vision, but in all the duties of his daily life, he did not become a hermit, shutting himself entirely from the world, for he had a work to do for Yahweh and the world, in the family and in his intercourse with men, as a husband and a father, a friend, a citizen. He was a steadfast, unwavering servant of the Yahweh, for his heart was in the harmony with the Yahweh's will. For can two walk together except they be agreed? And this holy walk was continued for 300 years. There are few Christians who would not be far more earnest and devoted if they knew that they had but a short time to live, or that the coming of Yahshua was about to take place. But the Enoch's faith waxed the stronger, his love became more ardent with the lapse of the century. For the Enoch was a man of a strong and highly cultivated mind and extensive knowledge, for he was honored with the special revelation from the Yahweh, yet being in a constant communion with the heaven, with a sense of divine greatness and perfection ever before him, he was one of the humblest of men. For the closer the connection with the Yahweh, the deeper was the sense of his own weakness and and perfection. To stress by the increasing wickedness of the unrighteous, and fearing that the infidelity might lessen his reverence for the Yahweh, Enoch avoided constant association with them, and spent much time in the solitude, giving himself to the meditation and prayer. Thus he waited before the Father, seeking the pure knowledge of his will, that he might perform it. Unto him prayer was as the breath of the soul. He lived in the very atmosphere of heaven. Through holy angels, Yahweh revealed unto Enoch his purpose to destroy the world by a flood. He also opened more fully unto him the plan of redemption. By the spirit of prophecy, he carried him down through the generations that should live after the flood, and showed him the great events connected with the second coming of the Messiah and the end of the world. Enoch had been troubled in regard unto the dead, for it had assumed to him that the righteous and the wicked would go through death together, and that this would be their end. He could not see the light of the just beyond the grave. In the prophetic vision, he was instructed concerning the death of Yahshua, and was shown his coming and glory, attended by all the holy angels, to ransom his people from the grave. He also saw that the corrupt state of the world, when the Yahshua should appear the second time, that there would be a boastful, presumptuous, self-willed generation, denying the only Yahweh and his son Yahshua, trampling upon the law and despising the atonement. For he saw the righteous crown with the glory and honor, and the wicked banished from the presence of Yahweh and destroyed by the fire. Now this wicked is talking about in these last days. This would be the end of the church. Those that have apostatized and accepted the false Catholic Trinity doctrine of the three in one person of the Godhead, and the place of the 1844 2300 day prophecy that was led by Ellen G. White, where Enoch became a preacher of the righteousness, making known unto the people what the Yahweh had revealed unto them. Those who feared the Yahweh sought out this holy man to share his instruction and his spirit, for he labored publicly, also hearing Yahweh's messages unto all who would hear their words as their warning, for his labors were not restricted unto the Sithites in the land where Cain had sought to flee from the divine presence. The prophet of Yahweh made known the wonderful sin that had passed before his vision. Behold, he declared, Yahshua cometh with the 10,000 of his saints, for the executing judgment upon all, and for the convincing all that are unrighteous among them of all their unrighteous deeds. For he was a fearless reprover of sin, while he preached the love of the Yahweh and the Yahshua unto the people of his time, and pleaded with them to forsake their evil ways. He rebuked the prevailing iniquity and warned the men of his generation that the judgment would surely be visited upon the transgression, for it was the spirit of Yahshua that spoke to the Enoch. That spirit is manifested not alone in the utterances of the love, compassion, and entreaty. It is not smooth tidings smooth, it is not the smooth side things only that are spoken by holiness, for Yahweh put into their hearts and lips of his messages truth to others that have been untethered as a two-edged sword. For the power of Yahweh that wrought with this servant is felt by those who heard. Some gave heed unto the warning and renounced their sin, but the multitude mocked at the solemn message and went on more boldly in their evil ways. For the servants of Yahweh are to bear a similar message unto the world in the last days, and it will also be received with unbelief and mockery. For the antediluvian world rejected the warning word of him who walked with Yahweh, so will the last generation make light of the warnings of the Yahshua's messenger. In the midst of the life of the active labor, Enoch steadfastly maintained his communication with the Father Yahweh. Brother, greater and more pressing of his labors, and more constant and earnest were his prayers. For he continued to exclude himself at a certain period from all society. After the remaining for a time among the people, with by the laboring for the benefiting them by the instruction and example, he would withdraw to spend a season in the solitude, hungering and thirsting for that driven knowledge, which Yahweh alone can impart. Communing thus with the Yahweh, Enoch came more and more to reflect the divine image. His face was radiant with the holy light, even the light that shineth in the face of the Yahshua. As he came forth from these divine communings, even the unrighteous beheld with awe the impress of the heaven upon his countenance. For the wickedness of men had reached such a height that destruction was pronounced against them. As year after year passed on, deeper and deeper grew the tide of the human guilt. Darker and darker gathered the clouds of the divine judgment. Yet Enoch, as the witness of the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, held on his way, warning, pleading, entreating, striving to turn back the tide of the guilt and to save the boast of the vengeance. His warnings were disregarded by a sinful, pleasure-loving people. He had the testimony that Yahweh approved, and he continued to battle faithfully against the prevailing evil until the Yahweh removed him from a world of sin unto the pure joys of heaven. For the men of that generation had mocked the folly of him who sought not to gather gold or silver or to build up possessions here, but in his heart was upon the eternal treasure. He had looked upon the celestial city. He had seen the King in his glory in the midst of Zion. For his mind, his heart, his conversation were in the heaven. For the greater the existing iniquity, the more earnest was his longing for the home of Yahweh. While still on the earth, he dwelt by the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua and the realms of life. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see the Father of Yahweh. For 300 years Enoch had been seeking purity of his soul, that he might be in the harmony with heaven. For 3 centuries he had walked with Yahweh. Day by day he had longed for a closer union. Nearer and nearer had grown to come union until Yahweh took them to himself. He has stood at the threshold of the eternal world, only a step between him and the hand of the blessed, and the land of the blessed. And now the portal is open to walk with Yahweh so long pursued on the earth continued, and he passed through the gates of the holy city, the first time of my men to enter there. His loss was felt on the earth, for the voice that had been heard day after day, and the warning and instruction, and instruction was missed. There were some, both of the righteous and the wicked, who had witnessed his departure, and hoping that he might have been conveyed unto some one of the places of retirement, those who loved him made diligent search, as afterwards the sons of the prophets searched for the Elijah, but without avail, for they reported that he was not, for Yahweh had taken him. By the translation of the Enoch, Yahweh designed to teach an important lesson. There was danger that men would yield to the discouragement because of the fearful results of the Adam's sin. Many were ready to respond, "What profit is it that we have feared the Yahweh and have kept his ordinances? Since a heavy curse is resting upon the race, and death is a portion of us all, but the instructions which the Yahweh gave unto Adam, and which were repented by the Seth and exemplified by the Enoch, swept away the gloom and darkness, and gave hope unto man, that as through the Adam came death, so through the promised Redeemer would come life and immortality. For the Satan was urging upon men the belief that there was no reward. For the righteous are the punishment for the wicked, and that it was impossible for men to obey the divine statute. But in the case of Enoch, Yahweh declares that he is, and that he is the rewarder of them that diligently seek him. He shows that he will do for those who keep the commandments. Men were taught that it is possible to obey the law of Yahweh, that even while living in the midst of the sinful and corrupt, they were able, by the grace of Yahweh, to resist temptation and become pure and holy, for they saw in his example the blessedness of such a life, and his translation was an evidence of the truth of his prophecy concerning the hereafter, with this award of the joy and glory and immortal life for the obedience, and of the condemnation, woe, and death unto the transgression. By the faith Enoch was translated that he should not see death before he was translated, for before his translation he had this testimony that he pleased the Father Yahweh in the midst of the world by its iniquity, doomed for the destruction. Enoch lived a life of such a close communion with the Father Yahweh that he was not permitted to fall under the power of death. For the righteous character of this prophet represents the state of the holiness which must be obtained by those who shall be redeemed from the earth. At the time of Yahshua's second advent, then as in the world before the flood, iniquity will prevail. Following the promptings of their corrupt heart and the teachings of a deceptive philosophy, men will rebel against the authority of the heavens, but like Enoch, Yahweh's people will seek for the purity of the heart and conformity unto his will, until they shall reflect the likeness of the Yahshua. Like the Enoch, they will warn the world of the Yahshua's second coming and of the judgments to be visited upon the transgression, and by their holy conversation and example, they will condemn the sins of the unrighteous, as any was translated to heaven before the destruction of the world by the water, so the living righteous will be translated from the earth before its destruction by the fire, says the apostle. We shall not all escape, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. That's in 1 Corinthians 15:51-52. For Yahshua himself shall descend from the heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of Yahweh. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For the dead in Yahshua shall rise first, and we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with him in the clouds, and meet Yahshua in the air, and so shall we ever be with Yahshua. Wherefore comfort one another with these words. That's the end of chapter 6. Okay, chapter 7, Patriarchs and Prophets, we're going to continue. We got about 30 minutes to go in this study. It's entitled The Flood. This is a subtitle. In the days of the Noah, a double curse was resting upon the earth in the consequence of the Adam's transgression and of the murder committed by the ten. Yet this had not greatly changed the face of the nature, for there were evidence tokens of decay, but the earth was still rich and beautiful in the gifts of Yahweh's providence, for the hills were crowned with a majestic tree supporting the fruit-laden branches of the vine. The vast garden-like plains were clothed with the verdure and sweet with the fragrance of a thousand flowers, for the fruits of the earth were in great variety and almost without limit, for the trees far surpassed in size, beauty, and perfect proportion to be found, for their wood was of a fine grain and hard substance, closely resembling stone and hardly less enduring. Yahweh's silver and precious stones existed in the abundance. Gold, silver, and the precious stones existed in the abundance, for the human race yet retained much of its early vigor. But a few generations had passed since the Adam had access unto the tree, which was to prolong life, and man's existence is still measured by the centuries. Had that long-lived people with the rare power to plan and execute the order themselves and to the service of Yahweh, they would have made their Creator's name a praise in the earth and would have answered the purpose for which He gave them life, but they failed to do this. There were many giants, men of the great stature and strength, renowned for the wisdom, skillful in the devising of the most cunning and wonderful works, that their guilt and giving loose rein unto the iniquity was in proportion to their skill and mental ability. So Yahweh bestowed upon these antediluvians many and rich gifts, but they used His bounty to glorify themselves and turn them into a curse by the fixing their afflictions upon the gifts instead of the giver. For they employed the gold and silver, the precious stones, and the choice wood, and the construction of the habitation for themselves, and endeavored to sell one another and the beautifying of their dwelling with the most skilled workmanship, for they sought only to gratify the desires of their own proud hearts and reveled in the scenes of the pleasure and wickedness not desiring to retain Yahweh in their knowledge, they soon came to deny His existence, for they adored nature in the place of the Yahweh of nature, for they glorified the human genius, or worshipped at their own hands, and taught their children to bow down unto the graven images. In the green fields and under the shadow of the deadly trees, they set up the altars of their idols, extensive groves that retained their foliage throughout the year, were dedicated unto the worship of the false gods. With these groves were connected the beautiful gardens, their long winding avenues overhung with the fruit bearing trees of all descriptions, adorned with the statuary and furnished with all that should delight the senses or minister unto the voluminous desires of the people, and thus allure them to participate in the idolatrous worship. Men put the Yahweh out of their knowledge and worship the creatures of their own imagination. And as a result, they became more and more debased, for the psalmist describes the effect produced upon the worshiper by the adoration of the idols, for he says, they that make them are like unto them, so is every one that trusts in them. It is a law of the human mind that by the beholding we become changed. For the man will rise no higher than his own conceptions of the truth, purity, and holiness. If the mind is never exalted above the level of humanity, if it is not uplifted by the faith to contemplate infinite wisdom and love, the man will be constantly sinking lower and lower, for the worshippers of the false gods clothe their deities with the human attributes and passions, and thus their standard of the purity was degraded to the likeness of sinful humanity, for they were defiled, and the consequence Yahweh saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually, for the earth also was corrupt before the Yahweh, and the earth was filled with the violence. Yahweh had given men his commandments as a rule of life, but his law was transgressed, and every conceivable sin was the result. For the wickedness of men was open, and daring, justice was trampled in the dust, and the cries of the oppressed reached unto heaven. Polygamy had been early introduced, contrary unto the divine arrangement at the beginning. For the Yahweh gave unto Adam one wife, showing his order in that respect. But after the fall, man chose to follow their own sinful desires, and as a result, crime and wretchedness rapidly increased. Neither the marriage relation nor the rights of the property were respected. Whosoever coveted the wives or the possessions of his neighbor took them by force, and men exulted in their deeds of the violence, for they delighted in the destroying the life of animals, and the use of flesh for food rendered them still more cruel and bloodthirsty, until they came to regard the human life with astonishing indifference. For the world was in its infancy, Yet iniquity has become so deep and widespread that the Yahweh could no longer bear with it. And he said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, for he declared that his spirit should not always strive with the guilty race, that they did not seek to pollute with their sins the world and its rich treasure. He would block them from his creation and would destroy the things with which he had delighted. To bless him, he would sweep away the beast of the field and the vegetation which furnished such an abundant supply of food, and would transform the fair earth into the one vast scene of the desolation and ruin. Amid the prevailing corruption, Methuselah, Noah, and many others labored to keep alive the knowledge of the true Yahweh and to stay the tide of the moral evil. For 120 years before the flood, the Yahweh by a holy angel declared unto Noah his purpose and directed him to build an ark. While the building of the ark, he was to preach that the Yahweh would bring a flood of the water upon the earth to destroy the wicked in 120 years. Those who would believe the message and would prepare for that event by the repentance and reformation should find pardon and be saved. For the Enoch had repeated to his children what the Yahweh had shown him in regard unto the flood, and Methuselah and his son, who lived to hear the preaching of the Noah, assisted in the building of the ark. Yahweh gave Noah the exact dimensions of the ark and explicit directions in regard for its construction in every particular. Human wisdom could not have devised a structure of so great strength and durability. For Yahweh was the designer and Noah as the master builder. It was constructed like the hull of a ship that it might float upon the water. But in some respects, it more nearly resembled a house. It was three stories high with but one door. Okay. Which was in the side. For the light was emitted at the top, and the different apartments were so arranged that all were lighted. For the material employed in the construction of the ark was the cypress or the gopher wood, which would be untouched by decay for hundreds of years. For the building of this immense structure was a slow and laborious process on account of the great size of the trees and the nature of the wood. Much more labor was required than now to prepare the timber. Let's read that again. On the account of the great size of the tree and the nature of the wood, much more labor was required than now for the preparing of the timber, even with the greater strength which men then possessed. All that men could do was done to render the work perfect, yet the ark could not of itself have withstood the storm which was to come upon the earth. Yahweh alone could preserve his servants upon the tempestuous waters. By the faith, Noah, being warned of the Yahweh of the things not seen as yet, moved with the fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world, and became heir of the righteousness which is by the faith of the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua. Father Noah was given his warning message to the world, his works testified as his sincerity. It was thus that his faith first depicted and made evident to give the world an example of the believing faith of the Yahweh said. All that he possessed, he invested in the earth, and he began to construct that immense boat on the dry ground. Multitudes came from every direction to see the strange sight and to hear the earnest, fervent words of the singular creature. Every blow struck upon the ark with a witness unto the people. Many at first appeared to receive the warning, yet they did not turn to Yahweh with a true repentance, for they were unwilling to renounce their sin. During the time that it lasted before the coming of the flood, their faith was tested and they failed to endure the trial. Overcome by the prevailing unbelief, they finally joined their former associates in the rejection of the solemn message. Some were deeply convicted and would have heeded the words of the warning, but there were so many to jest and ridicule that they partook of the same spirit, resisted the invitation of the mercy, and were soon among the boldest and the most defiant scoffers. For some are so reckless and had to go to such a length and sin as do those who have once had light but have resisted to the convicting spirit of the other. For the men of that generation were not all in the fullest acceptance of the term idolatry. Many profess to be the worshippers of the Yahweh, for they claim that their idols were a representation of the deity, and that through them the people could obtain a clearer conception of the divine being. For this cast the foremost and the rejecting the preaching of the Noah, as they endeavored to represent the Yahweh by the material object. Their minds were blinded as to his majesty and power, for they ceased to realize the holiness of his character or the sacred unchanging nature of his requirements. As the sin became general, it appeared less and less sinful, and they finally declared that the divine law was no longer in force, that it was contrary unto the church of Yahweh to punish transgression, and they denied that his judgment was to be visited upon the earth. Had the men of that generation obeyed the divine law, they would recognize the voice of Yahweh and the warning of his servant. But their minds had become so blinded by the rejection of the light that they really believed Noah's message to be a delusion. It was not the multitudes or the majorities that were on the side of the right, for the world was arrayed against Yahweh's justice and his law, and Noah was regarded as a fanatic. But Satan, when tempting Eve to destroy Yahweh, to disobey Yahweh, said unto her, "You shall not surely die." A great man, worldly, honored, and wise men repeated the same. For the threatenings of Yahweh, they said, are for the purpose of the intimidating and will never be verified. You need not be alarmed. Such an event as the destruction of the world by the Yahweh who made it, and the punishment of the things he has created will never hesitate. Be at peace, fear not. Noah is a wild fanatic, for the world made merry at the folly of the deluded old man. Instead of humming the heart before the Yahweh, they continued their disobedience and wickedness, for the saying as though Yahweh has not spoken unto them through his servant, as the Noah stood like a rock amid the tempest, surrounded by the popular contempt and ridicule, he distinguished himself by his holy integrity and unwavering faithfulness. His power attended his word, for it was the voice of Yahweh, and the man through his servant connection with Yahweh made him strong in the strength of the infinite power, while for 120 years his soft I can't understand that word. His S-O-L-E, his solemn voice fell upon. Let's read that again. He said, the connection with the Yahweh made him strong, and the strength of the infinite power. Now for 120 years, this solemn voice fell upon the ears of that generation in regard unto the events which so far as the human wisdom could judge were impossible. For the world before the flood had reason that for the centuries the laws of the nature had been fixed. The recurring seasons had come in their order. Hitherto, for rain had never fallen. The earth had been watered by a mist or dew. The rivers had never yet passed their boundaries, but had borne their waters safely to the sea. Fixed decrees had kept the waters from the overflowing their bounds. But these reasoners did not recognize the hand of him who had stayed the water since. Hitherto shalt thou come, but no further. As the time I passed on with no apparent change in the nation, men whose hearts had at times trembled with the fear began to be reassured. They reason, as many reason now, that the nature is above the Yahweh of nature, and that her laws are so firmly established that Yahweh himself could not change them, for the reason that if the image message of the Noah were correct, nature would be turned out of her course, for they made that message in the minds of the world a delusion, a grand deception, for they manifested their contempt for the warning of Yahweh by doing just as they had done before the warning was given, for they continued their festivities and their gluttonous feast. They ate and drank, planted and built, laying their plans in the reference to the advantages they hoped to gain in the future, and they went at the greater lengths in their wickedness and in the defiant disregard of Yahweh's requirements to testify that they had no fear of the infinite one. For they asserted that if there were any truth in what Noah had said, the men of renown, the wise, the prudent, the great men, would understand the matter. Had the antediluvians believed the warning and repented of their evil deeds, the Yahweh would have turned aside his wrath, and he afterwards did come to Nineveh. But by their obstinate resistance to the reproofs of the conscience and the warnings of Yahweh's prophets, that generation filled up the mist measure of their iniquity and became ripe for the destruction, for the period of their probation was about to expire. Noah has faithfully followed the instruction which he had received from the Yahweh. The ark was finished in every part as the Yahweh had directed, and was stored with the food for man and beast. And now the servant Yahweh made his last solemn appeal unto the people, with an agony of desire that words cannot express. He entreated them to seek the refuge for it might be found. Again, they rejected his word and raised their voices in the just and scolding. Suddenly a silence fell upon them, mocking song, beast of every description, of fiercest as well as the most gentle, were seen coming from mountain and forest and quietly making their way toward the ark. For a noise as of a rushing wind was heard, and lo, birds were flocking from all directions, their numbers darkening the heavens, and in perfect order they passed to the ark. Animals obeyed the command of Yahweh, while men were disobedient. Guided by the holy angels, they went in two and two and unto Noah and to the ark, and there came beast by the seven. For the world looked on in their wonder, some in the fear. Philosophers were called upon to account for the singular occurrence, but in vain. It was a mystery which they could not fathom, that men had become so hardened by their persistent rejection of the light that even the scene produced but a momentary impression. As the doomed race beheld the sun shining in the story, and the earth clad in almost Eden beauty, they banished their rising fears by the boisterous merriment, and by their deeds of the violence they seemed to invite upon themselves the visitation of the already awakened rest of the Yahweh. For the Yahweh commanded Noah, come thou and all thy house into the earth, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation. Noah's warnings had been rejected by the world, but his influence and example resulted in the blessing unto his family. As reward for his faithfulness and integrity, Yahweh saved all the members of his family with him. What encouragement for the parental fidelity. Mercy has ceased its pleadings for the guilty race, for the beast of the field and the birds of the air had entered the place of the refuge. Noah and his household were within the ark, and Yahweh has shut him in. A dash of the dazzling light was seen, and a cloud of glory, more vivid than the lightning, descended from the heaven and hovered before the entrance of the ark, for the massive door, which is impossible for those within the cove, was slowly swung to its base by the unseen hand. Noah was shut in, and the rejection of Yahweh's mercy was shut out, for the seal of the heaven was on that door. Yahweh had shut it, and Yahweh alone could open it. So when Yahshua shall cease his intercession for the guilty men, before his coming the clouds of the heaven, this is God. And for the seal of the heaven of it. So when Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, shall cease his intercession for the guilty men, before his coming in the cosmos, that the door of the mercy will be shut. Then divine grace will no longer restrain the wicked, and Satan will have full control of those who have rejected mercy, for they will endeavor to destroy Yahweh's people. But as the door was shut into the ark, so the righteous will be shielded by the divine power. For 7 days after the Noah and his family entered the ark, there appeared no sign of the coming storm. During this period, their faith was tested. There was a time of the triumph for the world without the apparent delay, and affirmed them in the belief that the Noah message was a delusion and that the flood would never come. Notwithstanding the solemn scene which they had witnessed, with the beast and the birds entering into the ark, and the angel of Yahweh closing the door, for they still continued their sport and revelry, even making a jest of those signal and manifestations of Yahweh's power, for they gathered the crowds about the ark, deriding its inmates with a daring violence which they had never ventured upon before. This brings in for our step this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour, call on us, number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.